as we get older, we start to change our views on what is and isn't possible, right? Someone will tell you an idea and you're like, oh my God, that's crazy. That's impossible. You cannot do that. Like, allow the crazy ideas to come. Allow yourself to dream without limitations.
Hey, welcome to Current Mood. This is your host, Jacqueline Schneider. Current Mood is a series exploring self-care techniques, mental models, and the core patterns propelling our increasingly digital lives. Through conversations with thought leaders across creative disciplines, I get a chance to learn about unique business paths and pivots through the lens of mental wellness. Hello, welcome back to Current Mood. Today, I sit down with Deepti Sharma. Deepti is a founder, mother, public speaker, former New York City Council candidate, and entrepreneur in residence at Columbia's Barnard College. Deepti is one of those people who truly cares, especially about community and access, and you can really feel that when she speaks. We talk about the effects of capitalism on creativity, local politics, and how everybody can play a part, why community really, really matters, changing the narrative through exposure, and how trauma plays into your existence and how to transmute it. We love Deepti. She's so sweet and she's just like very caring. And I hope that comes through when you listen to our conversation. Enjoy.
It's just quite interesting. Like, I don't think we actually understand what happens with capitalism, with money, and how that affects our mental health. Like, when we hear people talking about it in the news, how we're, like, taught to feel like we can't take a break.
Right.
And just, like, work on ourselves.
Right.
Because I can't survive without money.
Right. That's, like, an extra...
Unfortunately, because the government doesn't actually take care of me as an individual, right? Like, no one's paying for my childcare.
Right.
No one's paying for my kids' school. Yeah. No one's paying for their summer camp but me.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of forced into this, like, this working economy of, like, well, I constantly have to work or I have to do something for money.
I have a stomach ache just thinking about it.
I know.
For real.
Constantly.
No. Especially in New York, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. New York's cost of living is... You know, I was born and brought up here, so I love this place. And it's so hard for me to ever say I'm going to move out. And I probably won't.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go to visit other places, especially as a parent, you're like, wow, like, you have an outdoors, you have a yard. And
wow, you have a yard.
Yeah. Like, or even like, you know, oh, your school provides after school programs. Your school provides, like, a lot of sports at an elementary school level or has multiple languages taught. And this is a public school.
Right. That doesn't happen in New York?
No, not in New York
City. Or you have to, like, pay to go to a private school, and it's, grand a year?
Yeah, literally.
No, it is. No, my friend was telling me his sister just got a job at some fancy school in the Upper East Side, and it's like, he was like, yeah, I literally looked up the tuition. It was, like, somewhere, I forget the exact number, it was, like, $46,000 a year. I was like, what? That's, like, more than people make.
Yeah, that's a salary. I mean, I always tell people, I'm like, childcare is one of our salaries. That's why a lot of people decide to have, you know, one parent that decides to stay home, because what's the point if the entire, like, you're working, you don't get to spend time with your kids, and your entire salary is going to someone else taking care of your kid.
Touche.
So it is a very frustrating process, but, you know, I signed up to be a working parent. I always wanted to work. I wanted to contribute to the world. Hopefully the economy, but, like, for me, it was really about contributing to my community versus how much money is this going to help my country make.
Right. And which community is that?
Well, my current community is Queens, New York.
Okay.
But also just, like, you know, when I think of community, I think beyond where I live. I think of, you know, I am a mother. I am a child of immigrants. I am a person of color. You know, I'm an Indian American. And I think about all my labels as an human, as an individual, and I think about how are those communities, you know, what do they need? What value can I provide from the skill sets that I've, you know, acquired in the last, like, 36 years of my living? And so with that privilege that I have, what can I do for my community?
What makes you care about your community?
What makes me care? I don't know. I just want to see people thriving, right? Yeah. I want to see people living the best versions of their life. And I think that came for me. So I grew up in Queens, and the middle school I went to had a program where community service was a part of our curriculum.
As it should be.
Yeah. you know, like as so many things, right? Like financial literacy should be a part of our learning. Home ec should be a part of our learning. So everybody knows how to take care of themselves and cook and sew a button on their shirt. Just like basic shit, you know?
You would think.
You would think. But community service was a part of our curriculum. And every week, once a week, we actually went to preschool classes and kindergarten classes. Mm-hmm. And we hung out with the kids. And we would just, you know, kind of do different activities with them. And I was put into a classroom with disabled students. And here I am as a sixth grader. So you're like around 11, 12 years old, I guess. Mm-hmm. And these kids were having seizures right in front of me.
What?
Yeah. And I'm here to kind of alleviate and just bring some joy into their life.
And wow. Okay. Wait, how old were you?
Sixth grade. So like 11-ish, I think.
Okay. For a sixth grader.
Yeah. So from fifth to eighth grade, we did this every week. Go into a classroom, work with these students. And the idea was really to just bring joy and like bring a different perspective and be mentors, be friends, and just be other people in their lives that could just kind of they get to hang out with, right? Yeah. And so we just did a lot of fun activities. We helped the teachers. You know, we do snack time with them. But it was that, like, you know, I had never been exposed to that ever in my life, right? I've seen poverty. You know, I used to go back to India, and there was a ton of poverty there, right? So I grew up seeing homelessness. I grew up seeing that both here and there.
Where in India is your family from?
So my mom was born and brought up in Old Delhi.
Okay.
They're technically both from a state called Uttar Pradesh, which is in the north.
In the north, okay.
But my dad was born and brought up in Madras, in Chennai, whichever one you know the city by, in the south. And so it's really funny because while he's from North India, he has very much like South Indian like eating habits, mannerisms. He speaks the language, but is, you know, his family's originally from the north. So yeah, I mean, I grew up going back home to my, you know, family's home and just like visiting them. And so definitely saw what it's like to, you know, grow up in poverty, not myself, but others. And so when I saw people in my community, you know, from the same socioeconomic background with these disabilities, it was like disheartening. And I felt like, wow, like these kids are just like me, and they were born with this disability. They had no control where they were born, how they were born, what conditions they were born with. And yet they're, you know, they're here, and they're trying to live their best life. And if I can do something to bring some joy into their life, then I've done something right today. And so I think that...
Wait, as a sixth grader, you thought that?
Yeah.
That's so like you're an angel from another land.
I don't know about that. I'm like, definitely a crazy sixth grader. But
I mean, yeah. But a lot of sixth graders aren't thinking about that, I guess. I don't know.
So it took me time to get there, right? It wasn't like on day one this was happening, but it took me time to like develop this understanding of what we were doing, why we were doing it. You know, teachers obviously talked about volunteering and community service is important, looking out for your community. But you can say that to, I mean, everybody knows that they can go out and volunteer or, you know, do something for others, but it takes a certain kind of level of understanding or experiences yourself or things that you've seen that allow you to say, like, this is what I want to make of my life. I want to look out for my community. But yeah, I mean, I always like think about like, where did this come from? Where community, no matter what I do, community is always a part of it.
Yeah.
Or creating opportunities for people has always been a part of it. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, for me, like when you ask, like, why do you care?
Yeah, why do you care?
What makes you care about your community? I think it goes back to those like times of, you know, spending my time in the community, and it was part of my schoolwork, but I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it wasn't ever like, oh God, today's community service day. It was always like, oh, we get to go and hang out with these kids and like eat snacks with them and chill and you know, and just like see what, you know, you know, people always think you have to learn from somebody older than you. But in fact, I think we all learn from each other, no matter age, race, ethnicity, background. We can always learn something from somebody around us. And I think I always went in with that mentality, right? Like, I just remember this kid would bring in, this is like a really silly one, but this kid, for his snack time, his mom would give him red peppers, just like sliced up red peppers. And I was like, yo, you can just eat red peppers like this. Like, it doesn't have to be cooked in, like, in, yeah, you know, in a like a sauteed version of, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Just mind blowing as a sixth grader.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, that's cool. I could eat raw veggies and that's healthy. And, like, yeah, you know, that's not something I was exposed to, right? Like, yeah, eating raw red peppers. And again, that sounds like a really silly, trivial thing.
No, but those are like the kind of, like, not weird, but those are the specific memories that, yeah, like, open up, unlock stuff for you later.
Yeah. And it's just like, also, he was Greek, you know, so he's like, I was learning about his culture. Okay. He would bring red peppers and feta to
my
school.
People.
There you go. <good. laughs> So it was just like, you know, I would ask him a lot of questions like, oh, do you eat this like often at home? Is this a snack that you... And so just like little things like that, right? You, yeah, know, people look at my food and they're, you know, the reaction was always, that's gross, it smells, or you smell like curry. And I'm like, yeah, well, this just smells great. To me, at least.
My mouth just watered because Indian food all the time.
I know. I literally got home last night at midnight, and my mom had given my husband like a bowl of dal, which is lentils, and a paratha, which is like, you know, Indian bread. And like, I got home at midnight and I was like, I don't care, I'm not supposed to eat right before. I tear, like, yeah, I tore through it. Oh, it was so good. I took a picture of it, like, half eaten, and I sent it to my mom this morning. I was like, thank you for existing.
Seriously.
Yeah. It's the one thing I can't live without.
What's your mom like?
She's the sweetest person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was just talking about her to my husband today, and I was like, she's so sweet. If anybody told me she did anything wrong in life, I would have just be like, well, she probably had a reason for doing it, okay? Like, you know, you probably messed with her, that's why she hit you in the, I don't know. Like, no, she's just the sweetest, you know? Like, she came to this country at a very young age. She got married at 18.
Wow.
To my dad. They had an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
And, you know, she spoke English, but it wasn't her first language. But came to this country. She had graduated college with like a history major, and she started working, right? Like, she had to help support the family.
There we go, back to the work.
And so she worked in like a supermarket, then she worked at a bank as a teller.
In Queens?
In Queens was the bank. In the city, she worked at the supermarket.
So she moved from India straight to New York.
Yes.
Okay.
Straight to Queens.
Oh, wow.
Downtown Flushing.
Well.
Yeah. It's a very interesting place to be. At least, like, you could see others that looked kind of like you.
Yeah.
I mean, the area is definitely not like what it is today, which is extremely diverse. You have Chinese, Indian, Koreans, like, people from all over
Asia.
It's
like the whole world is in the borough.
Oh, absolutely. I always say to people, I'm like, walk down Roosevelt Avenue.
Yeah.
And you will go through all of, like, South America, Central America, yep, Mexico. Then you'll come up to, you know, obviously the States. And then, like...
The Philippines.
All of Asia. All of... Yeah. Like, it's kind of insane. But, yeah. I mean, so she came here really young. And she did everything she could to provide for us as kids, right?
How many are there of you?
Just me and my older brother.
Okay.
And, you know, I always think about, like, what it must have been like for her to be a parent where English wasn't her first language.
Right.
You know, there was no like internet where you could just quickly search things like I can today.
Yeah.
How she like navigated the world to just try to get us opportunities, right? Try to get us to learn how to swim, try to get us to take dance classes and Taekwondo. And I remember her having to like wait online for the community center because like in the community center had like limited spots for things, you know, after school programming. Mm-hmm. And she would be like the first one on that line at like 5 a.m. She would just stand there because registration, you know, started at 8 a.m. And she would just like sit there for like 2-3 hours to like register us. Right. And then this is what she was doing for us so that we had access to opportunities. And so that also is another element of why community matters.
Sure.
Because, you know, there were years where they didn't have money to pay for really expensive, nice classes. And the years that they didn't, they had to look for programs that existed for parents that, like, weren't making, like, you know, that $100K and had supplemental income for all these other activities.
Mm-hmm.
And so that community center meant so much to me, right? It is the first place where I learned how to do that, you know, Taekwondo class, take tap, jazz, and, you know, ballet, all in this community center, right? Like, and, you saw this beautiful community flourish, right? Like if I went there after school when I was having a problem, I could talk to anybody. There were like counselors there. There was mm-hmm. after school homework help. There was arts and crafts. And that's what makes a community flourish mm. when there's a place for kids to go.
Yes.
Feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, create a life for themselves or see how they can actually do something different with themselves, tap into their creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wasn't a great ballet dancer or tap dancer, but at least I knew I could do it. You know, at least I knew it existed.
You knew what it was, yeah.
And I could appreciate it. Now I go to the ballet.
Yeah, now you could, like, go to Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was because of that exposure at such a young age that I was able to actually develop this, like, interest and love for ballet.
Yeah.
But had I not had that, you know, I would be like, oh, yeah, ballet's boring. Oh, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. I always think about the exposure element, not only for kids, but just, like, for adults, too. Especially,
for anyone.
Especially in this, like, very polarized political climate. Mm. It's like there's so much, like, us versus them, and it's, like, very tribal, and it's, like, this weird place. And I was actually talking to someone yesterday about this. I forget who I was talking to. But we were just, like, if only they knew, like, is it you don't like this group of people because you don't know them or you don't have any access to, like, you just aren't familiar with it? You're not exposed to it? Or is it like you really just are a hateful person?
I think it's like, both, honestly.
Really?
I think exposure, yes, definitely helps change narrative
yes.
of what you might think or your condition, what you're conditioned to believe.
Right.
So exposure definitely helps.
Yeah.
But sometimes if that exposure isn't happening at a certain point in your life, you're so stuck with the knowledge that you have of what you've conditioned to believe about a certain group of people that nothing can really change that, right?
Right.
I mean, it's funny because in our culture, in the Indian culture, lots of people get arranged marriage,
married,
whatever.
Yes.
But what's interesting about it is they always say, oh, you know, when you're younger, you're less likely to, it's better to get married when you're younger because you're less likely to not want to change for the other. You can adjust to somebody else and who they are and, you know, like their habits and all that. The older you get set in your ways.
True.
Right? So while I don't think everyone needs to get married at like 22 or 23.
Right.
And I don't think that we should blanket like the Indian people do when it comes to marriage.
Yeah.
We do, as we get older, get set in our ways and it's much harder to change.
Right.
And change only happens if you want it.
Right.
Just like with any, like, if you think about mental health and, like, you know, even just, like, things that happen to people, like, change only happens if you really want to change or if you really want to seek that help.
Right.
And it's really, I can say anything to you today, but unless you really want it for yourself, you're not going to do it.
It's too real.
It's, like, I just don't think that, like, we the older we get, we know what we like, we know what we don't like.
Yeah.
We're not easily, you know, open to trying new things. We hope that we can be.
Yeah.
But, and so that's where I think, like, exposure at an earlier age, and that's where that, like, whole community aspect of opening up community centers and giving people a place to go to and exposure to young kids, that to me is really important.
Yeah.
And something I think about all the time, it's like, what exists for my kids? Like, how much can I expose them to, you know, different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why, you know, we stay in New York and I am living in Queens is because I want them to not only be around a diverse set of people, but people that are from different socioeconomic backgrounds as well. So they can learn, right? They can learn that not everybody lives a certain kind of bougie lifestyle. There's people with different means whose parents do different things for work, for a living, to provide for their families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of cool, right? Yeah. Like that they get this exposure and, you know, otherwise, you can go to a very diverse private school, but everybody is affluent.
How diverse is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's like going to Whole Foods. We have a lot of options, but you're still at Whole Foods.
Yeah, and it's still expensive as fuck.
And it's super expensive.
Yeah, as we sit across from one.
I didn't go there last week. Actually, I went there last week, and it was really expensive, and I was still hungry.
That's the horrible part
about
it.
I was like, what is... okay, we won't get into that, but I want to talk about... you as a professional, like, you have all of your various roles. You're a mom, you're a wife, you're an educator, like, you're all of these amazing things. But you're also an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
At what point did you decide that you were like, I'm okay saying I'm an entrepreneur?
I guess after a couple of years of having started my first company, you know, I was like, oh, I guess I'm running, you know, running my company. But also, like, when we finally started having revenue, which was, you know, within the first year. But even then, like, I just didn't feel comfortable being like, yeah, I'm a business owner, I'm an entrepreneur, or I'm a founder, or I'm a CEO.
What did you say then before?
I mean, I said what I had to say, but I didn't feel it on the inside, right? Like, there was still that imposter syndrome. For me, it wasn't until, like, Forbes 30 Under 30, like, I got recognized by
them. You're 30 Under 30? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh. I don't like talking about it because I think it's weird. but also, like, it wasn't until I got outside validation that I started to feel like what I was building was real.
Yeah.
And that sucks, right? Like, I hate that part of the, you know, the 30 Under 30 is nice, right? I got lots of exposure.
What category were you in?
Food.
So what was the business at that time?
So the first business, Food to Eat, was, it started off as an online ordering platform for food trucks.
Huh.
We then, within the first year, started working with restaurants because we were trying to expose, well, there were two things that we were trying to do. One was food trucks had never had any technology created for them, for people to order from them, pay with them. It was Square that was one of the first kind of companies that created, you know, where you could use a credit card.
Right.
But that even took them years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Food to Eat was an online ordering platform for food trucks.
So it was like a proprietary technology for specifically food trucks.
Yeah.
Huh.
But for me, it was really more about, like, serving...
The community.
So
weird.
But an underserved market, right? So when I was standing on... The way the company started was I was standing online at a food truck.
Where?
I was actually... No, it was in Midtown Manhattan, right by the public library.
Okay.
Because I was studying for my LSATs.
Okay.
And... while I was studying for my LSATs, I was like, oh, I need to take a break. And so I would give myself 30 to 40 minutes every day. Like, I had studied for like 7 to 8 hours. And
I love your jewelry, by the way. I just heard it make a noise.
Oh, thank you. and I stood online and I waited for 30 minutes and I got a peanut butter cookie. And I'm from New York. I can be impatient. I don't like waiting online.
30 minutes for a cookie? Was it delicious?
Oh, it was amazing.
Oh, okay. Well, sometimes, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess sometimes it's worth it, but, like, also, I just didn't
have
time.
I'm not a lines person. No, I worked in the music business for too long. I'm like, this is my benefit of this. I don't wait in lines anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was just like, why am I waiting in line? But instead of saying, oh, I'm going to start a company, I said to myself, like, why don't they have an app where I can order, pay, pick up at the front, and then just be gone, right? Like, just make it more, like, efficient, make it easier for me.
What year was this?
2008.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wow. Okay,
yeah.
So this is...
And apps were, like, starting to come out. Like, the iPhone had launched the year before.
Right.
But, like, you could order from a restaurant, right? Like, on a website.
Yeah.
You could go to Seamless or Grubhub. You can order. And so I said to myself, like, why don't we have this for food trucks? And then I started to learn about, you know, from my family who owned restaurants, that Seamless and Grubhub were charging restaurants anywhere from 20 to 30% per order.
Wow.
So I was learning all these truths about the restaurant industry and third-party services. Food trucks, what I was learning about them was, because I started interviewing a ton of them, was that they weren't using technology to make their businesses more efficient.
Right.
Right? Like, some of them didn't even realize that had smartphones that they could, you know, download the Chase app and deposit checks from their phone.
Huh.
And so, why? Because, you know, English isn't their first language. No one is creating a piece of technology that's, like, in their language. No one is coming up to them and saying, like, what do you need? How can we build technology to help your life be more efficient and easier? People always build for convenience,
right?
Consumers, the ones that are going to be spending the money.
Right.
And so for me, it was just about, like, okay, well, how do I help this amazing group of immigrant entrepreneurs? And they didn't see themselves as that, right? They just, you know, to them, they was like, I own this food truck. Somebody in my community told me that if I start this food truck, I'll make some money. They weren't thinking about how to scale during the winter months and maybe provide delivery because nobody was coming out and standing in those lines. It's a very seasonal business.
Right.
And so to them, I said, hey, like, you can actually keep, you know, put your food truck on our website all year round, accept orders. People run out, pick up their food, or you can actually just deliver the food down the street.
Yeah.
Most people are coming to your food truck are just like a few blocks away from you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was really interesting. I was talking to a lot of people's kids who spoke English because they didn't. Right. Yeah. And so those conversations really helped me understand, like, the community of food truck owners was immigrants, right? People like my parents, English wasn't their first language. Mm-hmm. They were doing this to help provide for their kids and pay for school and get them through college and hopefully a better future than their own, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, so Futi came from this, like, impatience, right, that I was feeling.
30 minutes for a cookie.
But then it developed into, you know, 1.0 at least, you know, turned into something that was to service the immigrant entrepreneur community of food trucks. And then the more and more we started learning, you know, we created our platform for restaurants that were struggling to pay high fees to third-party services. Mm-hmm. You know, we eventually pivoted into what we did up until 2020. Mm. And that was because raising money as a single woman of color was really hard.
I was just going to ask, did you guys raise or were you bootstrapped?
Bootstrapped. So we raised like $500,000 from like, which took me about almost 2 years, which kind of is crazy considering like how much people are able to raise so quickly.
Right.
Yeah. It took me about like 2 or 3 years just to raise that money. And that was like in chunks.
Like seed, friends
yeah.
and family.
Yeah. 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 Just anyone I could convince to be like, hey, like we need $20,000 to be able to do this for this part of our company.
Sure, sure.
I need to be able to pay these salaries. And, you know, at that point we had revenue, but it wasn't enough to pay, you know, a team of people.
Right.
And so, yeah, fundraising was a nightmare.
Okay.
And it was not easy. I was, you know, there were other people creating similar companies around me.
At that point, there was a lot of competition.
DoorDash, Uber Eats, all of them were starting to do delivery and stuff like that by the time we launched in 2011. And so Caviar, I'm like, yeah, I can, but they were all run by men.
Right. And like super, I would imagine like very startup-y, techie.
Very startup tech, people that went to Ivy League colleges, right. Like, you know, had the exact background that they expected from a founder. You
Which
know, and
is
I didn't,
so backwards to me. If I was going to invest in a company, I would be investing in the founder and their like who they are.
And they say they do, which they do,
they
right?
Say
they
that.
They say that, but they still look for the paper, right? They still look at your resume and say, "Well, what do they have that's going to prove that they can actually do this?"
Right.
Even though I had a list of things that I, had previously done that I felt like, you know, could showcase why I would be good at this.
Right.
But it wasn't enough, and to me at that time, you know, I said to myself, "Well, I can't build a business depending on other people's money. What if I was to just like change the narrative of how you build a business?" Because everyone at that time was just like thinking of a hockey stick, and the hockey stick had to not be about your revenue, partially your revenue, but like how many users are on your platform. Right. They didn't care about profitability. It was just like
community.
Yeah. Yeah. To some extent. Yeah. And so we, you know, I said to myself, well, let's go back to the drawing board. Why did I start the business? Because I wanted to help immigrant, you know, black and brown business owners to be able to add to their bottom line, right?
Yeah.
To give them technology that they understood and that helped them grow and scale their businesses, give them new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And so we pivoted into a business model that I knew I could make profitable a lot quicker than, you know, creating a consumer company that depended so much on technology to grow and scale with it as the company grew. So Futi 2.0 turned into a corporate catering platform where we partnered with immigrant women, minority-owned restaurants, basically black and brown businesses, women-owned businesses, to help them book catering jobs at large corporate offices.
Oh, wow.
So our clients were like, you know, Warby Parker, The Skim, Microsoft. And the idea was to help these small businesses get contracts that they normally wouldn't get.
Right.
But also to get corporations to see the narrative that I should be investing my dollars in diverse businesses.
Correct.
Diversity and inclusion is not just about hiring black and brown people.
Right.
It's about actually investing in them once they've been in the business.
Right.
You know, once they've joined your company, what are you doing for them?
Correct.
And so I said to them, like, bring food that comes from their cultures and their backgrounds so they feel seen and that they're not just, you know, as an Indian person, like, I wanted to see Indian food or at least, like, food from South Asia that was, like, remotely familiar to me to be like, oh, wow, like, the person next to me who's not anywhere near this country or hasn't ever been here is like eating my country's food and I can talk about it and like help them understand like why I love dal so much and so all these like simple things
why
were
do
really,
you love dal so much
I don't know. It's just so good. It's like no matter how it's made, like, you know, it's creamy. It's got texture. It's got protein. It's got flavor. It's got everything.
Is it like a long process to make it?
I mean, it can be.
Is it like made with love? Is it like one of those?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is a book that I read to my kids. It's Bilal Cook's Dal. It's the sweetest, and it was a way to get them to appreciate Indian food a bit more.
Yeah,
I don't want them, you know, sometimes they're like, oh, why do we eat this every day? And I'm like, because it's your, you know, ancestral food, and like, I really like this. And I think you do too. You're just afraid to admit it because no one at school is eating this.
What if it was their choice, what would they have?
You know, I mean, they actually do love Indian food a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know.
The kid stuff. Pizza.
Yeah, pizza, pasta, noodles. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But my kids are actually really decent eaters. They'll eat, like, tofu, stir-fried. They just want a variety of stuff. So yeah. I think that's their complaint. It's just, we love Indian food in rotation, but can we also have other stuff? Can we have our burritos and, you know,
yeah,
Chinese food? And so, like, that's a product of living in...
Kids that grow up in New York.
Yeah.
It's like they get every... You can get anything.
Yeah.
Especially in Queens.
They're so bougie. Kids in New York these days, it's so bougie. I mean, our, like, families talk about it where people are like... You know, growing up, like, our going out was, you know, like a Pizza Hut or like Taco Bell.
Totally.
And now kids are like, I want sushi. And I'm like, oh God, we did this.
You're like, go get a job.
Yeah, exactly. Go get a job. But also it's like good to expose them to stuff. So it's not the worst. But yeah.
I'm curious, like, with all of the, like, you had Food to Eat 1.0 and then you transitioned to 2.0. Like, how do you... In your business and just in life, like, how do you operationalize, like, an idea?
Oh. Hmm. So, you know, so we haven't talked about this, but I actually helped create an incubator at Barnard College. Barnard is the sister school of Columbia.
Yes.
It's an all-women's non-binary college.
Oh.
And cool. I started... the incubator there. They hired me as their entrepreneur in residence. And the reason why I bring this up
is... Cool job.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Wait, did you make up that job?
No, they did.
Oh, I was like, that is like a cool title.
Yeah.
A cool role.
Well, entrepreneur in residence is a job. You know, VCs hire entrepreneur in residences. Essentially, like, it's to hire somebody that started a company in the past to help their, you know... portfolio companies with anything that they might be going through.
Right.
Because, hey, here's someone that's actually done it recently.
How to operationalize something?
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, so one of the things that I like talk a lot about before people even start building and creating is, well, what is your why? Like, why are you creating this business? But second to that is, what is the problem you're solving and what is the solution? And is the problem you're solving a problem that is beyond you, right? Are you the only person that thinks that this is a problem, right? So when I was starting Food to Eat, was I the only one that cared about long lines at food trucks or did other people, right? So I did go and talk to the food truck owners to understand what they needed.
Yeah.
But I also talked to consumers and say, like, do you actually care to order, pre-order and prepay? And so you can just pick up your food and go.
Did you formalize the kind of... data collection, or you just kind of literally just went out and talked to people?
Yeah, I mean, like, formalized it in a sense is, like, you have to go out and talk to customers, right?
Yeah.
Just like I did with the food truck owners, I did the same with customers. I'd just, like, stand next to people that were waiting to get their food and be like, hey, would you actually like to pre-order your food? And so what I used to do back in the day before our technology was, like, fully built is that I would literally take their orders while they were online, give them to the person in the back.
Yeah.
They'd make their food first, and I'd create an experience to see if they actually enjoyed not having to wait online.
Well, yeah.
Some people actually said to me, like, you know what? I actually just enjoy waiting online because I get to talk to my friends and then I get my food. And I'm like, really? You don't want to just, like, not have to wait and just have your food because you get 30 to 45 minutes to eat. So you're just, like, shoving food down your face.
I mean,
face.
Yeah, I could totally see it both ways.
Yeah.
Like, the food truck is definitely an experience, too. And then, like, going up to actually, like, place the order, you can ask questions. And
but until I had talked to people,
you didn't know.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, the one thing that's most important to me when talking to our students, when I mentor or consult with any businesses is, like, especially very early stage.
Right.
Are you creating something for the right problem? And then is your solution the right solution? Oftentimes we think, you know, yes, okay, I've solidified the problem is big, right? And that other people think that it's a problem as well. well, is the way you're going to go about it the right way? Mm. And have you actually talked and surveyed people that are facing this problem?
That is a question that I ask a lot of clients, and a lot of times they have not.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are you spending money on anything right now?
Yeah.
You don't even know if this is a real thing.
Yeah. I mean, I always say to the students and just like anyone I work with, it's like you want to spend the least amount of money to create your 1.0.
Yeah, your MVP.
Yeah. Exactly.
I just said that.
I know. I let you say it so that I didn't have to. I say it enough. So, and people are always like, what does that mean? Unless you're in, you've built something.
Like, I know. Tech is showing.
Oh, that's okay. It means you've done something interesting in life. There's not necessarily. But.
I'm like, so operationalizing. So it's really about making sure there's a problem and that your solution actually maps back to that problem and that other people give a shit about it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, I think that's like the start to it, right? Yeah. There's a lot that comes with like actually rolling things out. And,
right.
you know, obviously we can stay here for days to talk about how do you roll out a business. But then it also goes back to, I think about the fundamentals, like what's going to get you to want to continue building your business?
Totally.
Is
the
your
foundational
why.
Stuff.
Is your why.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why am I doing this?
Yes.
What am I building for? Who am I building for? And do I actually care about this?
Yeah.
You know, anytime you're going to start a business, let's just say you need to want to spend the next 5 years trying to build it because that's how long it takes.
People don't understand that it takes a long, long time.
Yeah. I mean, that's why a lot of people fold or businesses fold within the first couple of years because they haven't thought through, is this a problem that I want to wake up to every day to solve?
That's
and
a
if,
commitment.
And if it doesn't work the first like way that I thought I should be doing it, will I be able to say, okay, I'm willing to spend another 8 to 10 months to figure out the next way to build it, right? I mean,
yeah, and do I have the runway and like the money to actually do it and the time and
all of
the mental capacity?
All of it.
The mental capacity is a thing that we don't talk about. I mean, maybe now we talk about it more because Oprah is like a legend, but like the mental fortitude that is required to get up every day and solve a problem for a business, especially when you're like, I don't have kids, but I imagine when you're a mother, when you're a wife, when you're like a daughter, like when you're all of these different things.
Yeah. When you have to serve a lot of those titles and to other people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think no matter how many labels you have attached to you, you know, whether you are a parent or not, or you, you know, are a spouse or not, like, I think just like for yourself, I think it's really important because it will tear you apart if it's not something you're really truly passionate about, right? Like if you don't like what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I've had that experience where I recently worked with a client that I just wasn't connected to because I just didn't think that what they were doing wasn't what I felt was the reason they should be doing it, right? They weren't connected to a mission or a purpose. And there was no intention behind the decisions they were making.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to step away because I've never done anything for just a paycheck, right? The paycheck is needed and necessary, especially in the world that we live in today.
Yes.
I have kids, and as anyone, you know, listening will know, having kids is expensive, especially in New York.
How much is having kids every year? Roughly? Like a whole, like six figures for two kids?
Yes.
And like, what are the expenses? Like just the basic living stuff, but then like there's
after school programs.
So many things.
Well, like also like, you know, in New York, they go to public school.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to pay for school, right?
Yeah.
They're from 8 to 2. Childcare is primarily most of the cost because somebody picks them up so that I can continue to work till about 6-7 o'clock.
Right.
And then I pick them up.
Yes.
And
you and your husband both work.
Yes. And then I send our kids to, say, for example, they go to a mixed martial arts class.
Sweet.
Then they go to swimming. Then they go to basketball.
So who takes them?
I mean, I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like these
so you
are
have
also,
like a second shift.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're done with work.
No. But these are also things that they're doing on the weekend, right?
Oh, okay.
So it's a mix of weekday, weekend stuff. But yeah, our caretaker during the day, she is taking them to karate. Like the activities they have during the week, she has to take them. There are days where I have to like get an Uber for her because she doesn't drive.
Mm.
So that becomes a cost for me. But I do these things because I do want them to be, I don't want them to just sit at home.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Like I want them to have activities and experiences that I had. They really shape me to become the person I am. And I hope that it helps them to build their interests.
Right.
And I also don't like shove them into things, right? I ask them like, hey, what do you want to do? Like
mm-hmm.
they were in soccer when they were younger. It wasn't their sport that they wanted to play. They love watching it, but not the best players. So then they started doing basketball.
Okay.
They love basketball. They really like it. So they're doing it. Then swimming. Because mm-hmm. I think swimming is a basic skill that is, like, very important to have.
Seriously.
And luckily, my mom, you know, was able to afford, my parents were able to afford to put us in swim lessons. Mm-hmm. And I swam throughout high school competitively. And so, like, you know, I want that for my kids. Like, just exposure to things that, you know, some things I had, some things I didn't. But I know how meaningful it was to have those things. But yeah, these are all costs. Everything is a cost.
Right.
Then once in a while, you want to take your kid out, right? On vacation to eat something nice.
Yeah.
All of that adds up. Their clothes, the nice, like, I bought my kid Jordans.
That's what's up.
And
he's a New York kid. Let's be real.
I mean, I never had Jordans. My parents were taking me to Payless.
Yeah, same. Like, I had, like, Airwalks.
Yeah.
Sad to say. Thanks,
but,
Mom.
Like, you know, they couldn't afford it, right? Like, it was...
It's expensive.
It is expensive.
And then they grow, and then they don't fit
and so, anymore. Well, I'm waiting for my kid to have the same size shoe as me so that I have his whole collection of whatever shoes he has.
Oh, wow.
It's fast approaching. He's only 7.
Small feet?
I have very small feet, yeah.
I was like, do you have
I'm a size 6.
I'm like, what?
I'm a size 6 for anyone that wants to give me their shoes. But yeah, I mean, kids... It's everything. And childcare is the majority of it because you're paying that other person a living wage.
Right, right. Yeah, it's kind of like having an employee.
Yeah. It literally is like having an employee.
Yeah. So there's a lot of action throughout your day. There's a lot of stuff. And right now, like, you're like in a bit of a transition.
Yeah.
Like, work-wise. Where do you factor in, like, and we'll get to the transition and kind of what's going on there. But, like, where is rest? How do you rest?
I try really hard.
Or what does rest even mean to you?
So this year, rest means that I'm starting to try to do the things that are important to me.
Okay.
So I swam all throughout, you know, my childhood and up until high school. I started swimming again this year. I found a pool and I swim once a week.
Okay.
So that for me is like, although it is working out.
No, it's rest in the way where you're tuned out.
Yeah, I'm tuned out. I have no phone. I have nothing. Yes, my watch is like just tracking my swimming so I can see myself getting hopefully stronger and faster.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, for me it's that I've started writing in my journal.
Okay.
And I'm not the best writer, but I think it is important to... like, write about how you're feeling and just, like, document your life for yourself.
Yeah.
Whether it doesn't have to be read by anyone. And, you know, one day maybe I'll write a memoir if I feel like my life needs that. But it might not be for anybody but for myself, right? And so, you know, I've gone through, as a lot of us have, gone through a lot of trauma. And I think, like, writing about that has been very helpful. You know, I started seeing a therapist in the last year.
Oh, respect.
Yeah, that was a big step.
Really? Were you kind of like resistant to it, or was it just hard to find someone? Or
I think I was never resistant to the idea. You know, I have always thought therapy is really important for people.
Yeah.
But I always thought, like, oh, I don't need one. What do I need one for?
Why do you think that was your mindset?
Because I didn't think I went through anything that tough in my life, even though I know I have gone through some really traumatic experiences.
Yeah.
For me, coming from the community that I come from, you know, the South Asian community, it's always like, just think positive thoughts and you'll be fine. You know, just be happy.
Oh, my God. That's also, I feel like that's a generational thing, too, because my grandmother was very much like that. She's like, she was early on the, like, self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, she was very spiritual and stuff like that. But then, like, my parents' generation... It was very like, oh, just literally don't talk about anything.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Throw it under the rug and never, ever move the rug.
No. Yeah. Don't
But our generation, I feel like, is much more open and understands, like, the value of, like, talking about things.
It's, you know, and I'm learning that, right? Yeah. As, you know, so what we didn't get to, so 2020, my first business, Food to Eat, took a big hit.
Mm, right.
And
Especially
in food. So we were servicing offices. People stopped going to their offices.
Right. There's no one to service.
We literally went from $1 million in revenue to zero in a day.
Wow.
And I talked to a Wall Street Journal journalist, and he, you know, was like, oh, my God, you know, tell me how it feels. I'm like, well, first of all, I want to say to you, I love that you're talking to me now that my business has crashed, but you never talked to me when the narrative was really nice and great and we were successful and we were flourishing, that you choose now to talk to me.
Was this a journalist you were in touch with during the peak of the business?
No, like, you know, we've pitched the journal before for some of the stuff that we were doing. We've you know, created some really cool campaigns and experiences. Like, we used to host these really amazing dinners, and people weren't writing about us then because we weren't newsworthy, but it was newsworthy when we were failing, which I get, I understand, but
the news cycle is
it's a frustrating place.
Trust me, I get it.
but at that time, you know, I said to myself, like, well, what am I supposed to do now? Yeah. What should I do? Like, the business isn't, I don't know what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
But we took that time to feed 500,000 New Yorkers. Mm. We worked with Rural Central Kitchen. We raised a ton of money ourselves. We did some grant writing, and we just fed people that were going food insecure.
Yeah.
We understood that the restaurant was losing business, so they had to let people go. Those people were going food insecure because they didn't have jobs. They don't have life savings.
It's crazy, yeah.
It's still a really crap industry in the way that it, you know, kind of pays its people.
Truly, yeah.
And so we were like, all right, how can we help? What can we do? And that's what we decided to do, which was like, let's just feed people. We did it for a year. And in that year, I decided to run for office.
Oh, that's right. You did run for office.
Yeah. So community came back. But, you know, I'm not going to, the reason why I'm bringing all this up is I ran for office. I didn't win. But the day after, I was out of, like, there was nothing to do. I didn't have a job. Right. Like, my company had taken a big hit. Which we haven't talked about. In 2017, I started another company with my husband. Mm-hmm. I co-founded it with him. And when I decided to run for office, I stepped away from that company as well, because I wanted to go all in to run for office. But when I didn't win.
What position were you running for?
City Council.
City Council in your district?
In Queens, yeah. Okay. District 24, which is like Kew Gardens Hills, Flushing, Jamaica.
That was like the district that got hit the hardest during COVID, no?
Yeah, one of the districts, yeah. Okay. I mean, all of, like, we also had like Elmhurst that had like a really high death rate there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the next day I had nothing to do, right? Like, I mean, I had plenty to do.
Sure.
For, like, you know, go volunteer, this and that, but I didn't have a job. And it was the first time since I was like 16, 17 years old that I didn't have a job. I've been working straight since then.
Right.
And that was when I said to myself, I started thinking more, right? My traumas of like things that happened to me in my childhood that have affected me as an adult.
You've slowed down.
I slowed down and I finally started to think about why I am the way I am.
Okay.
Why I act out in a certain way, or why I might be angry about certain things.
Right.
And that's when I was like, I need to start therapy. So that was a long-winded way to like kind of come to this realization, but that's where I finally allowed myself to breathe for a minute and think about what happened to me. And I was, you know, going through a lot. It was, you know, I just lost my company. My company was in the middle of an acquisition in 2022. So there was so much that I was dealing with, both on a professional and personal level, that I was like, maybe this is the right time. And I've believed in it for others, but now I need to do it for myself.
Oh, what's that like?
Oh, God. I mean, it was...
Me and Aunt talk about this all the time. Like, we call it carafe talk.
Yeah.
It's like filling up your carafe, so to speak, filling up your cup before you fill other people's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you realize that your cup did not runneth over.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I had a few things that I really wanted in a therapist, and it took me time to find one.
Yeah.
But I finally found one, right? Nice. Like, and I've been working with them for a year, and it's been transformational. You know, obviously, the trauma is still there,
sure.
But at least it helps me recognize my triggers. It helps me recognize how I can not leave it in the past, but allow it to not take over my
define who you are.
It doesn't define me. It doesn't take over my, you know, my mental health and my well-being.
Right.
And that I am more than my past.
Yes, that part.
Because while the past makes us who we are, it doesn't completely define us. And while it stays there, we can allow ourselves to grow and move past the things that have happened to us, and just try to live the life that we have today, right? Because we're always living in the past, or we're living for the future. Like, when I get this, then I will be happy.
Right.
we always forget to live the life we have today.
That part.
Because you have so much today, and if you don't take that in, then you're just not going to be grateful for anything. You're just going to keep thinking about what I don't have or what I did have and I don't have today.
Right,
like, whatever you have today is enough. And that's it.
Yeah. You woke up today. That's good.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to go back to, like, the bare minimum of what makes me happy.
Yeah.
Wake up, my kid, you know, like, I've been traveling for the past couple of weeks for conferences, and I woke up and my kids, like, slept in my bed. And kicked my husband out. They were like, no, we're waiting for mom to come home. And when she comes home, she's going to sleep with us.
Aww.
Because I was coming after bedtime.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of like slipped into bed with them. And so that's it. I'm just grateful for that. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that don't even get to do that because of the crazy things that have happened in their lives. So just the simple things, while I do want more for my life.
Sure. We all do.
At least be content.
Yes.
If not happy, then content.
Yeah. So where are you at now in terms of, like, what makes you content? Like, I know you're kind of, like, in a transitional place right now.
Yeah.
Aren't we always in a transitional place, I feel like?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we are, especially for the type A types.
Are you type A?
I think I'm, like, a bit of it. I'm not too type A.
Are you, like, right and left brain?
I don't even know, honestly. All I know is that I just, like, am constantly saying to myself, like, what else can I do?
I hear you.
I'm not a perfectionist. I believe in failures. I have failed so much. I keep a failure diary.
You do?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Just so, like, it's whether it's in my notes or, like, I write things down, the idea is to, like, go back to these failures, acknowledge them, learn from them, and try not to do them again. And if you do, you know why you did them, because you have patterns, and we all do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, right now in life is I'm just trying to figure out how do I add value to my community, to a group of people that just aren't being seen, you know. And for me, life has always been how can I create new opportunities for overlooked communities, right? So whether that's been through starting my companies as an EIR when I, you know, attempted to run for office, not attempted, I did run for office. I just didn't win.
Sure.
Whatever
that
is.
That's a hard thing to win.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, like, what I thought I had 8 months to do turned into 8 weeks because the person who was in office decided to, you know, leave early.
Oh.
And so it turned into a special election in the dead of winter.
Oh, God.
And someone who was in the seat prior, so 13 years ago, he was in the seat, he decided to run. And
oh, so everyone knew his name.
Everyone knew his name.
Yeah.
I was still very proud of what we did. Like, sure. I came in fourth out of 8 candidates. You know, I won against people that have been in the community for 30 years doing this work.
Would you do it again?
Yeah, I would.
I'd vote for you.
If only you lived in my district, you know.
I used to live in that district. Well, I guess not. I was in Woodside.
Oh, so you're a little further away.
Yeah.
In the borough, so you could have shown some love some way.
I would have been out there.
Yeah. But, you know, I was very proud of what I was able to do, but, you know, it takes time. So, you know, I didn't win, but I joined our community board, right?
So it wasn't a failure.
No, it was. And I didn't win. So technically, yes, a fail. But there was so much that I learned and so many ways in which I've grown. So many people that I've been able to meet and say, like, hey, like, you know, what do you need? And find other ways to help them.
So at the beginning of the convo, you said that your mission or, like, your intention was to kind of help people in the community who are underserved and kind of overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
How, it sounds like that's still your mission, which is amazing. How has that changed or evolved?
So I don't think it's changed or evolved. And I don't think for me personally, things will ever change. I mean, I always think about what is the level of influence that I can provide in the community that I live in?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where I am. I'm not trying to solve world hunger.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to solve or fix the healthcare system or childcare. I mean, I would like to.
Sure.
But I, as one person, cannot.
Right.
But what I can do is influence and or bring in new resources or opportunities in the community that I am a part of, whether it is for healthcare or education, you know, or for the community center. So I think that, like, as individuals, the most important thing to do is don't try to take on the world.
Yeah.
Try to take on, you know, whatever is in front of you one step at a time.
Right.
Because what we do is we start to overwhelm ourselves and say, like, the world is a mess and I need to fix it. It's like,
I mean, which is also true.
Yeah, it is. And the way you can fix it is by taking one step at a time, right? Like recycling properly or composting.
Yeah.
When you think about, like, you know, global warming, like, what are the things that you can do as an individual?
Yeah.
Consume less.
Sure.
Thrift more, right? Like, stop buying fast fashion. Like, if you want to think about your influence, these are the, like, your money and how you spend it is an influence on our economy, on our planet. Like, so I think that's what I keep thinking about is, like, where I'm at, what can I do? How many lives am I able to change? Mm-hmm. And if it's just three people's lives that I can change, then it's those three people's lives.
That's three more people than before.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? Like, it's my job is to just do what I can each day in the community that I'm a part of. Mm-hmm. And if I can grow and scale that influence or that impact, amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't want to overwhelm myself right now. I want to try to be a present parent. I want to try to be there for my partner.
Yeah.
I want to try to be there for, you know, the other PTA moms. I want to try to be there. And I can't be there if I'm trying to kind of always be in a place where I, you know, like that I can't realistically exist.
Be everything for everyone.
I can't be everything for everyone.
How has your perspective changed in the last, like, 6 months to a year? Like, I know you were navigating some, like, loss in your family.
I mean, I took a social break for 2 months.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah.
Was that impactful?
Yeah. It made me realize, like, even more than before, but, like, what is and isn't important, you know? Like, social media isn't real life, you know? And I learned that very much, like, by running for office, right? Yeah. So when you run for office, Twitter becomes a big part of your life because everyone and their mother is, you know, harassing you on Twitter about, like, what do you think about this or this or you said this? And it also makes you, if anybody here ever runs for office, like, very much think about, am I ready for people to harass the shit out of me?
Yeah, okay, for sure.
On all of my ethics.
Yes.
I'm like, I'm a good person. Why do I think I'm a bad person? But for me, what I realized is none of the voters, 90% of the voters weren't on social.
Mm.
They were just living their lives. They are working people that did their jobs, that went home. Mm-hmm. They wanted, you know, to be taken care of. They wanted their
basic stuff.
They want basic things.
Yeah.
To just live a life.
Yeah.
And those conversations were really important and impactful for me. Like, most people just want to be taken care of when it comes to, like, having a grocery store, a library, you know, a place where they can go pray in peace, you know, and not feel fear.
Right.
Feared, like, you know, that something is going to happen. And so, yeah, like, that break from social after, you know, something very tragic happened in our family was really important for me because I'd never done it before.
Yeah. You were out here on IG, like, I mean, all the stuff that you post to me felt very impactful and very intentional and very much, like, centered around, like, family, and you could just see, like, the love that you have for your kids, and, like, it was just, like, it was wholesome stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been someone that, like, uses the small platform that I have, you know. I'm not a big, you know, I am...
She's an influencer, guys. Don't believe her.
You know, I mean, I don't have, like, millions of followers, but and that's what we think is influence. But I think we all have influence, no matter how many followers we have.
Yeah.
And so for the followers I do have, for me, it was important to put information in front of them that I believed in.
Yeah.
That was important for them to know or understand. So, like, a lot of times it'd be like, oh, how can you go vote? How can you find more about the candidates that are running?
Basic stuff.
Basic things. Again. But things that people don't actually know or understand.
Right.
And yes, then there's the family stuff and my personal stuff. And what I've done in the last few months as I've kind of come back on social is just stop sharing too much personal stuff.
Yeah.
Because I think I needed to hold that close to me. And that was that it's just for me.
Right.
And now I'm just going back into work of, like, what messages do people need to hear? What will help people through problems that they may be going through, whether it's something super tragic or trauma that they may have faced?
Yeah.
What experiences have I had in the past, like, 3-4 years that might help them get through a certain situation that they're going through?
Yeah.
And so as I think about what does my social mean, I'm trying to kind of think about that. It's not to show off that I was hanging out with this person or I got to be at this gala or something, which is all, you know, well and good and important.
Yeah.
To some extent in some places and spaces, for me, it's just what can I do to help somebody else that might be following and going through a rough time?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it feels so, like, like a warm hug.
Yeah. I mean, it's honestly, for me, it's just like, again, be intentional and purposeful about the stuff you put out. And that message is really for me.
Yeah.
People can do and post whatever they want. You know, people will be like, oh, are you on TikTok? No, because I don't have the brain capacity to be on yet another platform. But yeah,
who does?
You know, but I respect the people that are creating and putting out content. I mean, I was just at a conference with a ton of content creators, and we just talked about this, like, yeah, right before we started recording. Like, it's hard work.
Yeah.
It's not easy to create meaningful content. So I right. have to do it consistently.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get back on this horse of, like, what is meaningful to yeah. my community of people following me? Why do they follow me? What do they want from me? And how can I help someone feel more empowered?
Yeah. What is your kids' relationship with technology like?
It's limited. So, you know, they have iPads. And the only reason we actually got them iPads was during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Our older one, who's now 7, needed it to log into his pre-K classes at the time.
For school.
For school. So they had no screen time up until the pandemic.
Yeah.
Barely any screen time. They watched a little bit of Sesame Street here and there, and that was about it. But Great. We never gave them our phones, nothing.
Yeah.
And the pandemic changed that, right? We were living with our children.
Right.
So now they still use their iPads for school, but there's a little bit of YouTube action, which I'm like, which is highly regulated. Okay. There's a lot of crap on YouTube.
That's what I've heard from my parent friends.
Oh my God, there's so much. The stuff you'll see is just wild.
Yeah.
And so I try to like be a little bit of like, I try to just be intentional about what they're watching,
yeah.
right? Like, I love PBS programming, stuff that I grew up with that was educational.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, my older one right now is into Dragon Ball Z, so he loves watching Dragon Ball Z, but, like, not just the show or the video games. Like, he's actually watching people draw the characters.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's learning to draw.
Oh, there it is. So, educational stuff.
Yeah, so stuff that, like, allows him to use his creativity and, like, do something other than just staring at a piece of tech. But this is also really interesting. We were at this event, and it was an event for kids. And we were waiting for a long time to get into the event, and there was a family in front of us.
Yeah.
And they live in North Carolina. They actually used to live in New York, but they moved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the kid was like to my kid and was like, hey, like, how can I stay in touch with you? Can I get your mom's number and I can call you? And they actually FaceTime each other through their iPads now. They watch videos together. They play games together.
That's cute.
And this kid lives in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well,
but they don't have phones. So it's just what, through like iCloud?
Yeah. It's like you can set up iCloud FaceTime.
Right, right, right.
Through email. And then they just like chat. And just, it's like the sweetest thing. So now he's using it to actually just hang out with a friend who lives in North Carolina.
That's an interesting use of technology. Imagine that.
Yeah, and it was the mom's idea, and I was like, oh, wow, I didn't even think of that. I was like, I was happy to give the kid my number.
Yeah.
I was like, as long as he's not, like, harassing me.
Yeah.
Which he wouldn't, obviously, but it was just, like, so sweet that he's built a friendship.
Yeah.
It's almost like the new version of the pen pal.
Totally.
Where he talks to him, they hang out. The kid's like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. And he hangs up and then calls him back. He's like, sorry, I took a really long time to poop today. And I was like,
Kids are so pure.
And my son was like, it's okay, it happens. And I'm like, oh my God. He's like, meanwhile, me and his mom are like on calls in the background. We just hear our kids talking about poop. And it's all normal because
normal
we all
stuff.
Do it.
Yeah.
We all do it.
Everyone poops, guys.
Yeah. You have to.
One of the things that my friend who's my friend, but also was my coach in the past,
mm-hmm.
one of the kind of tools he gave me, for when I was kind of like stuck or in like a weird place, he would just be like, go to the park, like go somewhere where there's like kids. Don't be a creep, obviously, but like go somewhere and just hang out with kids.
Oh my God.
Like,
yeah.
Literally just, and he has this one like little scenario that he'll always bring up about just how contagious like a kid's laugh is.
Oh my God.
And
yes.
I just find it so comforting, and like I don't have kids, but I love that like you could just be on the train or wherever and you could like be around kids, and it's just such a refreshing, I mean of course it can be aggravating sometimes.
Yeah.
And I so mean, many other emotions, but it's just like being around kids is so pure.
Yes.
What are some of the things that you've learned from your kids recently?
Like what if
like life stuff. Stuff that people pay thousands of dollars in therapy for.
I don't know. I mean, I think like for me, it's just like, it's not that serious.
It's not that serious.
You know, I think sometimes we get so caught up in, oh my God, this is happening and this person didn't do this and they didn't call me back in this right minute. It's like, it's not that serious.
It's not that deep.
Like, so when I see him and his friend talking, about poop. they'll just be like, all right, I gotta go. And they just like immediately hang. There's no like
no linger,
finishing the conversation, no like, oh, I like love you and like all this like extra talk. They just they have fun together and they move on. They do that. And there's no explanation. And there doesn't always have to be one, right? Yeah. And it's not that serious that I like just hung up on you and had to go, you know, like in so not so much my kids, but so as an entrepreneur in residence at Barnard who has to work with Gen Z students, what I have learned is my joy of, and I think it's similar to kids as well, like kind of similar to what you're saying, just go to a park and sit there. But like, as we get older, we start to change our views on what is and isn't possible, right? Someone will tell you an idea and you're like, oh my God, that's crazy. That's impossible. You cannot do that.
Correct.
And what I think is really important to think about, or at least what I've learned, is I lost my sense of like dreaming without having to care about the consequences. Mm. And I think that I get that from my kids as well as the Gen Z students mm-hmm. that I've worked with, that like there is no crazy ideas. Mm-hmm. And if they are like, allow the crazy ideas to come. Allow yourself to dream without limitations. And I think that's been one thing I've learned from my kids and from these students, because they just come up with the craziest ideas. My kids will build crazy shit with their Legos. My students will come up with ideas that like, I'm like, you can't actually do this,
right?
But let's play with the idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think the older I've gotten, I haven't allowed myself to dream without limitations. And I hope that we do more of that, right? Like just dream endlessly, allow ourselves to think big, take these crazy ideas, and yes, like you'll have to narrow them down into something that is realistic, but like take the crazy ideas, take a chance on something different today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think that you can actually like jump over that like 10-foot bar or something that you're trying. Like my kids always are like, yeah, I'm gonna climb this wall and then I'm gonna climb that. I'm like, realistically, hey, I know you can't.
For sure, bro.
Yeah, you're not going to get that basketball in. Like, you're just, it's not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
But I want them to dream that they can, and that they practice and they keep practicing and they get there.
Yeah.
And so, like, similarly to my students and my kids, I think it's just like that, stop thinking that everything is impossible. Stop putting so many limitations on yourself of what you can and cannot do.
Yeah.
And just allow yourself to, like, think big and you know, it's not that serious.
Thanks so much for tuning into Current Mood today. Don't forget to follow Current Mood on Spotify and give us a little rating if you're feeling it. Give us a little star action. 5 stars would be great. And follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have any ideas on future guests or any insights, feel free to slide right into our DMs on Instagram at currentmood.io. Thank you so much for being a part of this community. It really means a lot.